you've got to be smart and intentional. You can't cut corners and expect to survive. So
absolutely.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kenzie McEvely, the producer and host of McGowan Brabender's employee benefits podcast, Side Effects. I'm so excited to welcome today's guest, another MBer lending his time, knowledge, and expertise, consultant Tim Rieger. I can't believe we have done over 130 episodes, and this is the first one he's a guest on. Tim has been with MB for nearly 22 years and is consistently one of our top performers every year. He focuses on financial results and specializes in risk management and stratification, as well as first-class customer service. He has a passion for people and believes we're all in the business of serving others. Tim is an expert in self-funded insurance plans, and on today's show, he breaks them down and shares what types of employers are a good fit and the pros and cons of the funding arrangement. Tune in now. Hello and welcome to Side Effects. I'm Kenzie McEvely, joined by my co-host, McGowan Brabender, CMO Dave Homan. Thanks for being here, Dave.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
I know. And so we have one of the most popular topics, I'd say, in health insurance right now. I think it's one of your favorite topics, Dave, a self-funded insurance plan. And to do so, we wanted to bring in one of our most popular consultants, Tim Rieger. Thank you for being here, Tim.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
And this is your first time being a guest on Side Effects. After over 100 episodes, we finally wrangled you in.
I'm excited.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that Tim hasn't been on the air sooner and been on more often. We'll have to think about that for the future, because here at McGowan Brabender, we talk a lot about continuous learning,
yep,
and how important that is to our jobs. We don't have machinery. Our machinery is our minds.
Yeah.
And so Tim is a true student. He's kind of a unicorn in today's world, but there's not an article he hasn't read. There's not an opportunity that he passes up on to help educate our younger consultants here, because we live in a very tough, difficult industry to understand. And so
absolutely,
having Tim here is just like having a tenured dean of a college on staff. So,
ooh.
Tim, don't disappoint us.
No pressure.
I built you up here.
I hope our listeners know, though, that this is a big deal. So,
yeah.
And both of you are both very well-versed. You too, Dave, because uh-huh. We have a lot of clients who are self-funded. And we did actually have two episodes previously, one from 2016 and one from 2017 about self-funding. And we thought it was definitely time for an updated show. So we're just going to start on the basics. We'll try not to get in the weeds too much. So Tim, can you share what is a self-funded insurance plan and how does it differ from a traditional insurance model?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think a couple of things in order to maybe understand what self-funding is, it's probably important to take a step back. So when you think about an employer today that offers health insurance for their employees and their family members, you really have four foundations of a healthcare plan. So you have the TPA or the carrier, right? Who's paying the claims? You have the network, so where people go access care from providers, physicians. You have the stop loss, so you have the reinsurance, right? Because you wanna make sure you're insuring those risk up to a certain threshold. And then you have the pharmacy piece of that as well. When you're fully insured, all of that's baked under the entire umbrella. So a Cigna, an Anthem, an Aetna, United, they essentially accomplish all of that. And as an employer, when you're fully insured, what you're doing is you're paying a fixed premium for a particular set of coverage for 12 months, right? That premium does not go up. Behind the scenes, that carrier is assuming the risk, they're paying the claims, but the premium's pretty stable for the next 12 months. The challenging thing is, as we all know, healthcare costs aren't going down. So right. Employers are really looking for alternative ways to fund this healthcare dilemma, because it is very, very costly. Mm-hmm. So when you think about that, we've seen about a 60% increase in organizations that are migrating to some sort of partially self-insured arrangement.
Wow.
So there's a whole hybrid, but essentially what you're doing with self-insuring is you're saying, you know what, I'm gonna continue to offer the network, I'm gonna continue to offer the pharmacy, everything that we've offered in the past, but as an employer, I believe that we're better positioned to take on some of that risk. And if we perform well, we have the opportunity to reinvest back into our people, our resources, our technology, and really kind of reinvest back into the business. So that's a big piece of why organizations are stepping into that.
So why doesn't every employer self-fund? Because that definitely sounds like the better of the two worlds.
It is, and I think it comes down to the whole risk versus the reward. So if we go back maybe 15, 20 years ago, Our philosophy at the time was, is for most employers, you had to be several hundred employees to spread that risk out, right? You have to have enough people to spread that risk out. The evolution has come about as such that it's not a run, it's a crawl, walk, run. So you don't have to go from one extreme to the other. So there are hybrid alternative funding arrangements out there that exist that allow employers to step into that platform of being self-insured. Typically, when you think about the criteria, it's low turnover. It's an employer that has good cash flow, that is risk adverse. They're tired of trying to outrun the fully insured rate, right? That really only has a limited time frame. And they're willing to take on a little bit of risk, but ultimately they're in it for the long haul. This is not a strategy that you get into for a year or two and then you get out.
So what do some of the stair steps look like? You said that there are stair steps. Like what? So you have your fully insured at one end and then you have your self-funding at the other end. What are some of the, like, just to give our listeners an idea of like what a hybrid would look like?
Absolutely. So on one side, you've got the fully insured, which you have a low level of risk, low level of reward. Again, it's a pretty stable premium. As you move over to the right, part of what we do at McGowan Brabender that we're really passionate about is we educate and teach organizations on what those options and strategies are, what's the financial impact, and then what resources does it take. So as you move over to the right, you might consider a level funded option. So it's a quasi self-insured that you're paying the fixed premium or the maximum costs every month. And if you run well, you get money back at the end of the year. And every strategy, every carrier, every plan is a little bit different. But that really keeps that cash flow stable. And it's not as risky as somebody that says, I want to go beyond that, where I want to pay claims as I go, but I have to have the reinsurance to be able to protect a high catastrophic member or the overall well-being of the plan.
So the big thing is just pulling the right levers to get you where you're comfortable as an organization.
Absolutely. And I think part of what small employers struggle with under 100 enrolled is they struggle for data, right? Uh-huh. So they're hungry for data where they want to be able to make accurate decisions. So part of our role, besides educating and teaching, is really looking at that data as much as we can, doing different types of analysis to see if there's some sort of commonality that this data point tells us they should be or they shouldn't be. And some of it's a timing issue, right?
Would you say that's the main reason why it doesn't work for a lot of employers is the lack of data?
I would say lack of data, but probably more importantly, it's probably the demographics and the makeup of the organization. So some of that data we can get through like a form fire, or we can get through a census, we can get through other means, but we really have to just make sure. It's very easy to go out and secure a self-funded proposal, but it's risky. So you've got to take the time on the front end to kind of educate that client or that business owner and their team on what that looks like. Because if you don't, while getting into it, it's very easy, exiting that plan is very difficult because you still have to pay the run out of those claims and that cost. If I leave a carrier and I'm fully insured today, I walk out, I turn off the lights, that carrier assumes the run out. That's part of what I'm paying them for.
Mm-hmm. So Tim, it shouldn't be I got my renewal, I'm really unhappy with it, I'm desperate for new ideas, hey, let's go self-funding. It's something that there's a long runway that you've got to have everything checked off the list before you're self-funded if you want to be successful long-term.
Absolutely. And I think about our industry and some of the biggest efficiencies that I still see today is that organizations get through the renewal, whomever they're working with, they may not see or hear from that firm for 6 to 8 months. Pre-renewal timeframe shows up. That organization's coming out talking to them about these strategies. The problem is as you get into pre-renewal, you're focusing on carrier, plan design, and rates. So all of a sudden, now your focus is completely different. That's a short amount of time to try to digest all those options and strategies. Yeah. So I'm a big proponent of that first 3 to 5 to 6 months post-renewal, focusing in on the education and teaching process. And what may be a fit for them today may not even be a fit for them 2 or 3 years down the road or vice versa.
So Tim, for our listeners, going back then to maybe the operations of the self-funded plan, how does the financial structure work with the different components and how it works together for protection against, like, let's say, catastrophic claims? And then what safeguards, like, how is it set up and structured so that, like, smaller clients, like you said, that we never even would consider in the past of putting in self-funded, now there are things that make it a little more manageable. Like, what are some of the things that administrators of self-funded plans are doing to make it palatable?
Yeah, if you look at the dollar today, typically, if you're fully insured, 100% of that dollar is going to the carrier. that carrier is taking that dollar and they're using it to disperse, to pay claims, pooling, admin, all the things they do behind the scenes. As an employer, when you make the decision to go self-insured, about 60 to 80 cents, 60 to 87 cents, give or take, is really the claims portion. The rest of that is the admin, it's the reinsurance. The admin fee is really a fixed cost. It's a guaranteed cost that appears every month. That's the fee that you're paying the TPA or the carrier to administer the plan. And then you have two different types of really reinsurance. The first one is specific stop loss. Specific stop loss tends to be the most expensive, right? Because you're insuring the catastrophic risk. So if you think about most employers, 2% of the people drive 60% of the claims, 4% drive 60%. So it's always a small few that's really driving the large majority of the cost. As an employer, you're not always privy to when those claims pop up, right? Mm-hmm. And if they pop up and you don't have any reinsurance, that could be a major cash flow disruptor. Likewise, if you think about the overall liability of the plan, you have to make sure that you have insurance or reinsurance to protect that. That's called aggregate stop loss. I call that your sleep at night. So as, as an executive, as a team, yeah. you want to make sure that you're adequately looking at that. Now, as you grow as an employer, you may get to a point where you're over 500 lives, 600 lives. There's some different literature on that. Or maybe you don't need the aggregate stop loss and your focus is just reinsuring the actual member piece of that as well. But this space is much more complicated today because as we've seen an increase in organizations self-funding, they're now taking a step back and saying, okay, 10 years ago, I was self-insured with one of the national carriers, right? So it was vertical integration. What they're finding out is they want to look at those four foundations of the healthcare plan, and they want to look at independent best-in-class solutions to be able to bring that plan together. And the way to do that is you have to have a boutique or flexible type of third-party administrator to be able to build that best-in-class solution. When you do that, you create disruption. And disruption isn't a bad thing. But it's going to require more work on the employer side. It's going to require us to educate the employer and the employee. And it's also going to require the employee to get more involved in their healthcare selection as well.
I have a random question. We keep saying catastrophic events. What's an example of one? Do you have like an example or a situation?
I think about cancers. So when you think about stop loss claims, oftentimes the question becomes what's the highest stop loss or what's the most prevalent stop loss claims that are out there today? Cancers, leukemias,
preemies,
cardiovascular,
oh, wow.
kidney disease, newborns. In fact, newborns are the number one claimant for $3 million and above.
Wow. Yeah.
So if you think about where we've come, all these great medications, all these great treatments, they come at a price. The incidence of million-dollar claims are up over 40% the past 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what Tim just went through was kind of the high level, here are the different components. You need a stop loss carrier, you have your aggregate rate, da 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 da. But the devil is in the details, and do not assume that all stop loss carriers and all contracts and the structure is the same. Like when you get to self-funding, you have to be over the top fanatical with understanding the contract language because an or versus a nor, or an and an and or something. That's the difference between, and we've seen it here, between having a claim covered at $150,000 and having it denied because of the contractual languages and the way it's handled. And so we place a great deal of emphasis on the stop loss carriers that we work with, and we hold them to a much higher standard as far as like the language that's in there, things that the wording so that it benefits all of our clients and not just one or two of them, the way they have it structured. Mm-hmm. It's really important. And Tim, you're on the front lines. You can probably speak to that.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, and this is probably a whole nother segment of, okay, let's crawl, walk, run. What are the nuances? We can get real technical, but one of the common concerns out there is that you have an employer who has a plan document. So they have an SPD, right? That SPD outlines all the terms and conditions and how the plan is supposed to be administered.
So those are the rules. So when you use your plan, this is kind of the playbook for how the claim gets paid.
Okay. When you're looking for stop loss, one of the things you have to be really careful about is making sure that that stop loss language mirrors the SPD.
Okay.
There are instances out there in this country with employers where they switch stop loss carrier, the due diligence hasn't been done, the stop-loss language does not mirror the SPD, a claim is incurred, and the stop-loss's carrier is saying, we're not going to cover this, which means that employer is on the hook for that liability. Yeah. Because the SPD dictates the terms and conditions on what they're going to cover for their employees, which means that they don't have reinsurance for that specific piece. So again, we could spend a lot of time kind of going down the nuances, the prescription piece, but again, it's very easy to get proposals, but you've got to be really mindful about reading through the contracts. Equally important is, what's your exit strategy? So if you get to a point 3 or 4 years down the road where maybe you have a reduction in force, it's not what you thought it was, what's the exit strategy? You better have a good idea of an exit strategy before you even get into it. Setting reserves, making sure things are appropriately accounted for, all those things, you do not want surprises on the tail end of that, right? So that ramp up time of 6 to 12, even preferably 15 months, is really, really important.
Yeah, it requires a much higher level of ongoing engagement and tenacity, I guess, for lack of a better term. You've got to constantly be looking at it. I think a lot of times, like fully insured plans, hybrids, captives, things like that, you can almost go on autopilot because you're looking at costs, you're tweaking a plan here or there. But self-funded, you have to constantly be looking at formulary changes that are out there, about new experimental treatments, about how stop-loss carriers are treating, you know, newly, you know, released approved procedures, all of those things. Like every year, you have to look at that. And you can't, if you miss a year, you could be in a lot of trouble.
So your HR team needs to be pretty on the ball.
Well, or your whoever you're working with, that could be your broker, consultant, your TPA. If you go, you have to have if you're not using a good broker, consultant, you really need to have a good attorney reviewing everything.
Yeah.
And I do think it's important, besides the consulting firm that employer is working with, having HR, having finance, oftentimes finance, president, CEO is involved. Sometimes HR may or may not be. I always consider them part of the executive team, because when decisions are made, everything flows typically through them.
Yep.
So when you're making carrier changes, when you're making network changes, if there are any disruption or any things that come up, oftentimes when an employee has a concern or problem, that's the first person they're going to, right?
Yeah.
So I think about that piece. I also think about things like captives. So as you think about these catastrophic expenses that have gone up over the years, organizationally, people are looking at that and saying, I like self-insured, but I'm not so sure I want to take on this risk. How can I pool my resources together with other like-minded organizations? That's where captives come into play. So,
and we have a whole episode on captives coming up. Maybe we can have you come back.
Absolutely. So again, there's lots to consider, even with networking, right? So there's traditional PPO networks that you rent. There's even the opportunity to remove the network and look at like a Medicare pricing. And that's a whole nother discussion around the cost of that and what's the disruption. So self-funding can be a lot of fun in terms of just the direction and the creativity, but you've got to make sure that all collective parties are on board and that everybody's moving in the same direction.
Yeah. So really quick. So going back to that, you said can be really fun. I think about, and I like to go through this exercise when I explain it, the difference between self-funding, fully insured. I always ask them, in a fully insured plan, when the group does better than expected, who wins?
Not the employer, it's the carrier.
Absolutely. In a bad year with a fully insured plan, who wins?
The carrier.
The carrier, because they may have taken the loss in that first year. Trust me, they're going to be okay and healthy the second year with it. Now, fully with self-funding, in a good year, who wins?
The employer.
Yeah, but in a bad year, who wins?
The employer.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Good so, game but
it's
life.
But it takes... It's not something like you can't base your decision off of that. It's all the criteria that Tim used at the top of the podcast.
Right. So Tim, are there compliance requirements employers need to be aware of when they're implementing this?
Well, number one, I think you need to align yourself with a good ERISA attorney, right? So you need to make sure that you have an ERISA attorney, if you can at all possible, to be put on retainer. Secondly, looking at the TPA that you're interviewing, that you're working with, making sure that ERISA attorney is reviewing their documents. So you think about the term negligence, but there's a lot of different just nuances and things that need to be reviewed prior to making a selection to go in with that TPA. And then beyond that, as an employer, depending upon your size, that's what's going to dictate whether you're fully insured or self-funded, what other types of compliance requirements you have to deal with.
So what kind of flexibility does this plan offer?
So today, as an employer, if I'm fully insured and I get my data and I find out that my ER utilization is through the roof and I want to make a change, depending upon that employer's size, they may not have the opportunity to go in there and specifically laser out that ER copay, right?
Right.
Because a lot of the plans they purchase are kind of off the shelf. They've already been approved by the state. So they don't have the flexibility to go in there and tweak that plan design.
Ooh, okay.
When you're a self-funded employer, again, that's another lever. You can sit there and you can look specifically at a benefit or a plan as long as it's within compliance, and you can make that change to initiate the behavior that you want.
Yeah, so there are certain things that you have more flexibility about as a self-funded employer. Like here at McGowan Brabender, we believe very much in the preventative exams that are out there. And colonoscopies are ones that come to mind immediately. And for employers out there, you understand that if something gets upcoded one time, like preventive care, it's supposed to be covered at 100%.
Right.
But there's a polyp that's found, something else happens. A lot of times colonoscopies are just miscoded. And so once it's upcoded, every time then that you go in afterwards, you expect to have a $0 copay. Suddenly you get a $1,200, $1,400 bill. How likely are you to get your other preventive care done and taken care of? So here at McGowan Brabender, what we've done is we've structured our plan, colonoscopies, regardless of how many you have done or preventive or diagnostic, we changed the way our summary plan description was written to cover that at 100% because we never want that to be a barrier. So Tim, what other things do you, are there other instances or things that you've seen employers that they include in that maybe isn't standard, or is colonoscopies preventive care the big one?
I think that's a big one. The other thing too, I think about is like musculoskeletal.
Okay.
So maybe you're bringing in an external vendor like a Regenex or some other program that you can kind of manage that musculoskeletal spend. So again, if I'm fully insured, there's not much of an appetite for that care for you to bring in external vendors, but that's specifically what they focus in on. So I'll go back to when you're self-insured, one of the advantages is you get data. And data is wonderful because with data, it gives us a bigger lens to be able to specifically evaluate, diagnose, and assess what types of programs we want to be able to put in. Okay. Now, again, not all third-party administrators are created equal, right? So some of them are going to play well with others. They're going to allow external programs to come in, and others are going to be more resistant as well.
Yeah.
I love Regenex, by the way. That is a great tip. So what strategies can employers use to mitigate risks?
Number one, I think it's being educated. So I think about an employer that's considering self-funded. One of the questions I go back to them is what are you doing to manage that risk? Do you know who your risk is? And then what does your population health management program look like? So in layman's terms, what are you doing for wellness?
Yeah.
Right? What's your philosophy? If there's not much of an appetite for looking at that risk and trying to find ways to mitigate it, then really what they're looking at is a different way to fund the risk, but that risk is going to be there whether they're fully insured or self-insured, right? Yeah. So to me, you've got to be really open to ideas and recommendations around, you know, the whole prevention. Some of the things you can't prevent, like the cancers and some of those pieces that come up that are catastrophic, but 80 to 90% of the healthcare dollar is driven by chronic conditions that can be better managed or lifestyle conditions that can be better, you know, avoided altogether. So that's the piece where you have the biggest opportunity to make an impact. If you can do that and you're open to that, that's where I think it's worth taking on the risk.
So do you think most self-funded plans or people that or employers that have that have good wellness programs in place too?
I tend to see a trend where most of them are open to it.
Okay.
So they're open to trying new things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'll go back to, it's not a one size fits all. You got to know your audience. You got to know the industry, right? Biometrics may not be a great fit for one organization if they have to take people off the floor. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it might be better for them to go to their primary care physician. 50% of the people don't have a primary care physician, right? Let's get them connected.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the huge clinical lifts that are out there. And what we have started spending a lot of our time focusing in on is not just the chronic conditions, but it's the point of accessing care. Are you going to the right provider in that moment every time? Are you going to a hospital for your MRIs? Are you going to a freestanding facility where it's a $1,500, $2,000 swing in the pricing of that? It's just do I have a primary care physician? That is probably, if there is the quickest lift where you want to make a difference, have your employees get a primary care doc, but not just a general run-of-the-mill primary care doc. Make sure that they're reimbursed on a pay-for-value basis, meaning they're getting paid to effectively manage and take care of you.
Yeah.
And so those are, I think those are some smaller lifts that you can use.
It is. And I think when you're thinking about a third party administrator, so someone that you're selecting to pay the claims, if you go self-insured, there's really two different types of TPAs. So there's ones that are transactional in nature. They set up the plan, they pay the claim, that's it. Sometimes I think they forget or they fail to realize that what they're paying, that's the employer's money, right? So they're paying this transaction, but I'm not sure they're always in alignment with thinking about it as if it was their own. You have other TPAs that obviously pay the claims, but they also have kind of care navigation. So they take it a step further where they're trying to guide members towards cost-efficient quality of care. Mm-hmm. For 30, 40 years, the member's really been insulated from the true cost of healthcare. So the member doesn't know what the cost of healthcare is until after they get that explanation of benefits.
Right.
And as a self-funded employer, it's too late.
Yeah.
And then you throw in studies with Medicare where the private sector is paying about 2.4 to 2.5 times more for the same services than what Medicare pays. You have some employers that are saying, you know what, I'm willing to not only go self-funded, but I'm willing to remove the network and look at Medicare as a multiple for reimbursing the providers. And that gets real disruptive, but it also addresses the root cause of the purchase price of the cost. We're starting from Medicare and going up versus from the bill charge going down.
And what is that called?
It's called Medicare. It's called reference-based pricing,
yes. Okay.
Cost plus. Mm-hmm. There's lots of different terms that are used out there. Sometimes they'll talk about fair market value, which is a little bit different. But all of it really has a common theme where they're removing the network and they're looking at a non-traditional way of reimbursing the providers.
So, Tim, we just finished a series of four podcasts on pharmacy.
Yep.
When you're looking at pharmacy and self-funded plans, is there anything special, different, unique that you need to take into consideration?
Yeah, and that's a big question. And it's probably difficult to have a short answer. But I think, again, for some employers that initially want to get into the self-funded route, for them, it's about getting used to the concept of self-insuring. And the least disruptive for them initially might be vertical integration. So I'm going to keep my pharmacy benefit manager carved in with the carrier or the TPA of their choice because this is a big step for me. And I don't want to start looking at these four foundations of a healthcare plan independently. That's too much. So that's where you go from that kind of that crawl to walk. Mm-hmm. But as they become more sophisticated and they start to realize some of the different trends and things that occur with that vertical integration and that there's money being left on the table, then they become more open to, do we go out and look at carving out our prescription? Do we go direct to a pharmacy benefit manager, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the cost associated with that? And then what's the reward for doing that?
So here's a question, Tim. Then you're going to meet with McEvely Enterprises.
Okay? Oh, Dave's going rogue.
Kenzie's got 500 employees, and she's coming to you. They're fully insured. And she says, interested in self-funding. I was at a conference, and let's move forward. And let's say that they've got some wellness initiatives that are in place. They have decent cash flow. They're ready to at least put their toe in. Going from fully insured to what you just described, where you get to the point where you're self-funded with you've carved out your pharmacy mm-hmm. with a PBM, how many years to get from having the conversation to get to that point? If it's your average company that's doing the right things, is it a 3-year, 4-year, 5-year? What does that look like?
I would say between 2 and 5 years.
Okay. Ooh.
And I say that conservatively. We've had some clients that have moved quicker, and then we've had some where, again, it just takes a little bit of time
okay.
with that. So it does take quite a bit.
So once you make the switch, when should you reasonably expect to see the benefits of that? Because I think that's the problem we run into with wellness initiatives is people want to see immediate ROI on it. And self-funding it's not necessarily an ROI or you've got to be smart and intentional. You can't cut corners and expect to survive. So
absolutely. I think so. A couple of things. I think about the population health as I think about the self-funded piece. And some of it's not about ROI. It's about cost avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking about if you were on that path, that trajectory, if you were fully insured, with the average trends, what would that look like annualized over 5 or 10 years? How does that compare to where you ended in year one versus year two versus year three? And then what we have the ability to do with our great analysts is to take a look at the data 2 and 3 years prior and say, okay, had you been fully insured, would you have spent more money? Would you have saved money? So I'll go back to that comment I made in the beginning. Data points are really important for us to see if we can draw some common themes. And if there's a common theme, that helps guide us in the right direction. The other thing too, before we would even get into the educational piece, I believe is sitting down with the executive team and having a philosophical discussion around where their core beliefs are relative to health management, self-funding, what their appetite is for risk. Oftentimes, I think about HR, they carry the torch of culture. They think about benefits and comp differently than somebody that's in finance, somebody that maybe is a president or CEO. It's really important to have all those important team members in a room, understand what their differences, what their philosophies are, and then the drive towards some sort of common decision. From that, we'll be able to kind of assess what their appetite for risk is and how much. And then we can start to build out a roadmap on that crawl, walk, run approach. For most organizations, they're not bleeding edge. So they want to be apprised and kept up to date of what's out there, but they don't want to be the first person that's jumping into the pool, right? They want to kind of vet it out. Mm-hmm. They want to think about it. They want to come back and they want to learn again.
Yep. So Tim, looking ahead, what are some trends or innovations that you think are going to happen with the future of self-funding?
I am fascinated in the world of prescription. I think that is the hot topic, and I know we've just recently completed some podcasts there. But if you think about the traditional employer spend, 80 cents of the dollar typically has been medical, 20 cents has been prescription.
Yep.
That's now a 70-30, in some cases 60-40.
Wow.
So specialty Rx was about 5% of the scripts written last year, but about 50% of the overall prescription cost.
Woo.
So it's no stranger when you're watching TV, all these different ads that are coming at us to tell us that we need these medications. So I think employers are really taking a step back. GLP, that's a topic that everybody's talking about. But that's one example of many where how do we maybe rethink how we're purchasing these medications? And like the care navigation programs that the third-party administrators have, what types of care navigation do these pharmacy benefit managers have? So if we can take a look at that small percentage driving a large portion of the cost, mm-hmm. what are some alternative programs that are out there? That's a really exciting industry because we can be really disruptive and we can help contain cost, but it's going to require more of the member getting involved. Mm-hmm. And sometimes philosophically, organizations aren't quite ready for that yet, right? And that's okay. But we have a role to at least expose them to what's out there and then to kind of have them go down that path at their pace.
Absolutely.
One last question. So for our listeners, one piece of, you can only give them one piece of advice. If they were going out to explore self-funded plans and you could only tell them, here's one thing I wish somebody had told me when I was learning, or one thing that stump most employers or they have trouble wrapping their heads around, what would that be?
Surround yourself with people that are smarter than you. Find an expert that's in the industry that really loves to educate and teach, and that isn't in it to sell a product or to sell a service, but really has just unbiased, solid education, because that's really what you want.
Yep.
There's a lot of product, there's a lot out there that cost a lot of money, take a lot of time, and it may not even be the right fit. So it's really important to make sure that you do your homework, that everybody's comfortable. There's no silly question, and oftentimes we're in this business, right? We talk about it every day. Part of what we have to realize is that our clients and businesses out there are not. So sometimes we have to slow down. Mm-hmm. We have to go back to the basics. Because if they don't understand that, these other strategies are going to be really hard for them to grasp.
Wow, mic drop with that.
Yeah.
I think that's a wrap. Is there anything else you want to add, Tim?
No, just excited to be here. Love what I do. The best thing I get to do is go out and teach organizations on what all these ideas and strategies are. And in the 22 years of doing this, I can tell you that the innovation the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years probably equals the first 15. So there's a lot out there that's flying around.
Our neck up knowledge.
That's right.
Well, that's a wrap on our self-funding episode. So thank you to Tim Rieger, our subject matter expert today. Yes. For sharing all of his knowledge with us. And if you have any questions or comments, you can connect with Tim on LinkedIn, or you can shoot me an email at kenzie@healthierbirthdays.com.
Or dave@healthierbirthdays.com.
Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Side Effects.